from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Bush administration told the nation that Saddam Hussein had hundreds of tons of weapons of mass destruction that he was ready to use against the United States. We know where they are, said Donald Rumsfeld, and if we waited for UN inspectors to find them, we did so at our peril. After an attack like September 11th, that seemed horribly plausible. But now the hotly alleged WMD are nowhere to be found. And the question being asked is why the administration insisted they were there in the first place. If the intelligence community got it all wrong, the U.S. has a serious problem. If the White House went cherry-picking for evidence that was less than sound, then George Bush may have a problem of his own. Tonight on Point, the missing justification for war. We begin in Washington, where the president announced today that he will create a bipartisan commission to investigate the U.S. intelligence system. The announcement is seen as a response to pressure from both sides of the aisle to explain why no WMD have been found in Iraq. David Sanger is a reporter for the New York Times. I asked him for the latest plans for the new commission.
Well, the president finally decided that all of his options were bad, and so he would create a commission that would enlarge the problem. It would look not only at Iraq, but at what to some are the bigger failures, or almost as big failures. We didn't detect how advanced Iran had gotten with its nuclear program. By the time the IAEA inspectors got in, they found active uranium enrichment plants. We missed Libya on the same issue. We're confused by North Korea. And perhaps most importantly, we are just now unwinding a Pakistani scientist network that was helping all of these countries that seems to have been in operation since 1987.
So, David, after a day or two for this to settle in Washington, how's it being received? Is this seen as an effort to illuminate what happened with Iraq or to bury the issue in a bigger pile?
Depends on who you ask. If you ask the Republicans, they say, well, of course, we have to deal with the root issues. If you ask the Democrats, they say, by expanding the issue, the president is hoping to bury the Iraq issue and particularly not go at the critical question, which is not just whether the information that was gathered about Iraq included a series of misjudgments, but whether or not the White House then went and cherry-picked just the intelligence they wanted.
Will it be possible for the president to mandate this commission in such a way that it's focused entirely on the intelligence operations of the United States and not on the political interpretation that went on there?
I don't think politically that's going to be possible.
In other words, whether he'd like to put it all in the intelligence can or not, you don't think it'll stay there?
Particularly if the Democrats who are appointed on the commission, and he said it would be a bipartisan commission, insist that they go not only to the question of how intelligence is collected, but how it is used.
Which is all about interpretation. What about the membership of the commission? You mentioned Brent Scowcroft in your reporting, David. Any further word on membership?
Well, General Scowcroft is right now the head of the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board.
And, of course, he was his father's national security advisor.
His father's national security advisor, but also a fairly prominent critic of the way the president went about the Iraq decision, and a very public critic of it. But there are a lot of other names that are being kicked around. Former directors of Central Intelligence, Bob Gates, for example, Bobby Inman. You're hearing names of former defense secretaries and people who have either used intelligence or gathered intelligence or both.
Does framing the commission's mandate in the way that's now expected, and when is this supposed to come out? Sometime later this week, the formal announcement?
I would suspect that in the next couple of days you'll see the formal announcement.
All right. Does framing it around intelligence put CIA Director George Tenet's job in jeopardy? Is he the target here?
Well, the president's been very careful to try to avoid that impression, and there could be a couple of reasons for that. Number one, I think Mr. Tenet and Mr. Bush actually genuinely get along, although many Republicans have been suspicious of Tenet for years because, of course, he was a Clinton appointee. Mm. But I think the second and bigger issue is that the president got cross-wired with the CIA last summer on the Niger issue. Remember when the president's State of the Union statement that Saddam Hussein had attempted to buy uranium from Niger.
The famous yellow cake statement that he later had to publicly, formally retract.
That's right. And then that got into a question of had it been the CIA's fault, had George Tenet read the State of the Union address, had they provided enough warning, so forth. The result was that the intelligence community got quite angered. And that's dangerous here, not only because of the alienation of a group that obviously the president needs the help of, but because if you have an angry intelligence group, you have a higher chance of dissidents stepping out and saying, no, I don't think that the reports that I turned out were dealt with straight up, that particular news was buried or particular news was exaggerated. I'm not saying that would happen, but there's a higher risk of it if it appears to be that the blame is being put on the CIA.
All of this is expected to be aimed at a target some 18 months out on the other side of the presidential election this fall. That puts it awfully far away. Is there a precedent for commissions like this and how much they begin to leak or talk in public? Or might it just be all be bundled up in a time capsule that doesn't emerge until the election's long past?
Well, partly that depends on how big a mandate they have. I suspect that between now and the election, you probably could come to some interesting answers about what happened to the Iraq intelligence, whether these bigger issues of broader intelligence failures could be addressed between now and the election. I would severely doubt that. What are some interesting examples? The two shuttle commissions for the Challenger accident and for the Columbia accident both reported back within 9 months or so, and both of them had both short-term investigative conclusions about what went wrong and longer-term conclusions about how NASA had to be fixed. Not a bad analogy to be used here.
David, why do you think President Bush finally decided to do this, finally decided that he couldn't just sit tight and stick with the line that they'd done the right thing in difficult circumstances?
Well, the line that they had done the right thing in difficult circumstances did not answer the fundamental question. If the critics came to the president and said, as many did, you took us to war on a set of bad intelligence, even if you didn't mean to come back and say, yes, but the war was just because we've gotten rid of Saddam and isn't the world a better place, doesn't address the question of how you ensure that the intelligence is better the next time you face a hostile state that may have weapons of mass destruction. How are you supposed to believe your intelligence about North Korea, about Iran, about Libya, about some country that we can't name right now? To do that seemed to me to be a fairly untenable position of saying we're going to ignore what went wrong.
What's your sense, David? How hot an issue does the White House seem to see this as being in a political context?
It's difficult to tell the answer to that question, Tom, because I think a lot of that depends on how big a campaign issue it becomes. I was up in New Hampshire with some of the candidates, and certainly they all raised it there. But I suspect that as the campaign goes national and as the war itself recedes a bit in time, the normal economic issues that political campaigns usually run on will, in fact, dominate the debate. But certainly, you've seen both Senator John Kerry and Governor Dean and others try to use this issue to attack this administration's overall credibility around the world and to suggest that, in fact, it is not interested in the facts.
It will be fascinating to see whether this commission muffles the issue or keeps it alive. David Sanger, thanks very much for joining
us. Thank you, Tom.
David Sanger is a reporter for the New York Times. He spoke with me from Washington. We're talking about the president's call for a new bipartisan commission to investigate intelligence failures in Iraq and beyond. Is it high time or a waste of time digging into the case of the missing WMD? Was the administration pushed by bad intelligence into war with Iraq, or was the administration doing the pushing? And if officials hadn't claimed a WMD threat, could the nation have been persuaded to go to war? Do you trust the president's commission to get to the heart of the matter? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is James Woolsey. He was director of the CIA from 1993 to 1995. He's now vice president at Booz Allen Hamilton, a Washington consulting group. He was a longtime advocate for regime change in Iraq, using his considerable Beltway influence to make a case for war. In December 2001, Salon.com wrote that, quote, if the United States finally decides to extend its war on terrorism all the way to Baghdad, it will be thanks in no small part to former CIA Director James Woolsey. Good evening and welcome, James Woolsey.
Hello, good Tom. Good to be with you.
Thanks for being with us. James Woolsey, how do you interpret the president's announcement today that he will name a bipartisan commission to dig into this whole pile of intelligence issues?
Well, I think it's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. It's an important issue. We may well learn some things we can use in the future. There's a history of looking at situations where intelligence seemed to be wrong or inadequate. One of those, for example, in 1997-98 was the first Rumsfeld Commission, which I served on, that looked at the CIA's estimates of ballistic missile threats and came up with some rather different thoughts, which were more or less borne out by a North Korean ballistic missile test in the summer of 98. So there are things you can learn about changing the way you look at things in the intelligence community, changing the nature of your collection. And the only thing I guess I would say about this commission is that there are six investigations going on now. There's Mr. Delfer taking up Mr. Kaye's,
David Kaye's position, right?
Right, with the investigation in Iraq. And then there are the two congressional committees, the intelligence committees of the House and Senate. There's one, I'm told, in the Army. There's one run by Mr. Clark out at the CIA, a former deputy director. And there's one of some sort going on the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board that General Scowcroft chairs. So six is quite a few, and seven is one more. Maybe it would be a good idea to let this one get started after a month or two or three after a few of these have reported in, so you aren't simultaneously investigating the investigators, but that's really more a matter of bureaucratic confusion than anything else.
It sounds like
it's important to do this, I think.
We may be on a faster track than that. James Woolsey, given the relative ease with which the U.S. ultimately took over Iraq and the lack of weapons of mass destruction there, do you still make the case that Iraq was a dire threat to the United States?
Well, I don't think I ever used the word dire, but threat, yes. And I do believe that the war was justified. Even people who don't believe it was justified, I think, should want us to prevail now. That's a subsequent question. But the key issue is that I think the administration, as I wrote in the Wall Street Journal this morning, had a better case for war than it made. It had a strategy that it pronounced in fall, I think September of 2002, in which it said that the key thing for a country being potentially a candidate for a preventive war was that it be essentially a terrible dictatorship that had weapons of mass destruction work going on of some sort and ties of some kind to terrorist groups, the obvious threat being the possibility that, say, something like anthrax might be given to a terrorist group.
It put WMD right at the heart of that rationale, then.
Yes, but it was sort of a three-legged stool. The terrible nature of the regime, the work on weapons of mass destruction programs, and the ties with terrorist groups. And they didn't have to be ties in which the government in question managed the terrorist groups. It could be just contacts. So I think the administration, by focusing so hard and making its case just on weapons of mass destruction, presumably they did that because they were going to the United Nations, and many members of the United Nations are not interested in human rights. Indeed, they appointed Gaddafi the head of the Human Rights Commission. And also some, I think, in the intelligence community were reluctant even to draw some of the very basic conclusions about the connections of one kind or another.
But maybe they did it to get the American people to go to war, James Woolsey. Would the American people really have been interested as a humanitarian gesture?
Well, the American people supported President Clinton twice in the 1990s when he went to war against Milosevic, admittedly only from the air. But
far smaller engagements, pulled away from Haiti when we had guys with a couple guns on the pier.
That did happen, but we went to war twice and were successful twice against Milosevic, and Milosevic killed approximately one-tenth as many people as Saddam, about 200,000 versus 2 million.
But, Jim Woolsey, isn't the real question whether the spotlight is being focused in the right place here? Is it really an issue of whether the intelligence community got it wrong or whether the administration took whatever they could find to make a clamoring case for war?
Well, I think it's important to find out whether or not the intelligence community got it wrong, and if it got it wrong, exactly what it got wrong and why, and we may be able to make some progress on that, although this is a wilderness of mirrors dealing with this Iraq. David Kaye has said that, as well as there were press reports earlier, that a number, maybe all, of the Iraqi generals who had combat commands knew that they themselves didn't have chemical weapons, but they thought the units on either side of them did.
Right.
Went ahead and said that Saddam himself may have been deceived by some of his own scientists. So it really is a vortex of corruption, as he put it. It's a terrible morass.
And Vice President Dick Cheney in August 2002 said, simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. So should we be investigating Vice President Cheney instead of the CIA?
Well, one needs to look at what evidence he was relying on, and presumably that was the late 2002 National Intelligence Estimate. And I think that there is a very good chance that there were some stockpiles of some kind of chemical or bacteriological weapons.
James Woolsey, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We'll come right back. Does this look like an intelligence failure to you or something else? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about an investigation into the missing rationale for war in Iraq and maybe broader U.S. intelligence failures as well. The WMD are missing in action. The president says he wants to know why. You can join our conversation tonight. Does this look like an intelligence failure to you or something more? And what's your level of confidence that the president's commission will get to the heart of this matter? Do you want an answer before you cast your next vote for president? Is sometime next year soon enough? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by James Woolsey, former director of the CIA from 1993 to 1995. And Jim Woolsey, I'm sorry, I had to interrupt you there just before the break. You were saying perhaps there were weapons there and they got out of the country. In that case, was war a good idea?
Whoa. Not weapons, necessarily. You need to distinguish between what the technologists call agent and weapons. Agent is, for example, anthrax, either in powder or liquid form, or chemicals that can be added together to produce something like VX.
This is what Colin Powell was talking about at the UN when he said, our conservative estimate is that Iraq today has a stockpile of between 100 and 500 tons of chemical weapons agent.
Yes.
We haven't found it.
Right. But to keep in mind what 100 tons is, that's five tractor trailer loads of chemicals. That's all. And the amount of anthrax that he talked about in that speech, he contrasted the 8,500 liters of anthrax, which Saddam, remember, admitted having made after his son-in-law, who was the head of the biological weapons program, defected, and about 25,000 liters, which Powell said may well have been produced and said in the speech because of the amount of growth media that they had. Well, 8,500 liters is 8.5 tons. That's well under half a tractor trailer load. And if you reduce it to powder, which Powell talked about the possibility of being done in the speech, and we saw weaponized anthrax in powdered form here in the fall of 01, if it reduced to powder, that 8,500 liters is about four suitcases worth. The 25,000 liters is about 12 suitcases worth.
So was war the way to track that down? We haven't found it.
Well, war may not necessarily have been the best way to track it down, but the point, to my mind, as I said earlier, was not just the stockpiles of WMD if they existed at the time the war started. Some of them may have been destroyed late. Some of them may have been shipped out to Syria, another possibility which Kay talks about. The point was the nexus between WMD programs, terrorist groups that had some link of some kind with the government, and the terrible nature of the government. And as I pointed out, the terrible nature of the government alone drove us to war twice against Milosevic in the Clinton administration with no U.N. sanction, I might add. We prevailed both times entirely on human rights grounds.
WMD program activities, as President Bush quoted David Kaye in his State of the Union speech. James Woolsey, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation Jim Walsh. He's Executive Director of Managing the Adam Project at Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. His research and writing have focused on weapons of mass destruction, terrorism in the Middle East. Good evening and welcome, Jim Walsh.
Good to see you, Tom.
Jim, the focus of the president's commission, we're told, is to be a broad look at how the intelligence community has not been performing up to snuff, right across the board, Libya, North Korea, Iran perhaps, and certainly Iraq. Is this the right place to be shining the flashlight here? Is it an intelligence failure, or was it a misinterpretation of intelligence? What's the right prism for looking at what happened in Iraq?
Could I ask, will the commission only look at WMD issues, or is it other issues as
Actually,
well?
I think it's quite broad. It's broader even than WMD, but Jim, perhaps you know more than we.
Well, I believe that's right, that it is, as President Bush's advisors described it, the purpose here was to enlarge the problem, to move beyond the question of simply were we wrong in Iraq. But let me step back and answer your question, Tom. In principle, I would welcome the idea of an independent, and I want to stress independent, a look into what happened here, which is, I think, different than the other investigations than Jim Woolsey has described.
Are you saying by that that President Bush's commission will be independent?
No, I'm saying we're the devil's in the details.
Still waiting?
And so far, we have no assurance of that. We don't know who's going to pick the commission members. We don't know the rules.
Well, we have some sense that the president will be involved in that, and he'll be involved in shaping the mandate of this commission.
But the question is, will Congress or will other parties also be able to name members, as has been the case with previous independent commissions. There's a reason why they're called independent commissions, and the idea is that if there is a problem here not only with intelligence but with the way the White House handled the intelligence, then clearly we need to have other folks who are participating in this process to guarantee that this is an honest assessment rather than something that is
well,
a whitewash.
So far I've seen bipartisan attached to it, but not independent. So there's the issue of who makes it up and what the mandate is, but what about the focus? The president has been very clear. As you say, they want to broaden, they want to enlarge the look here. Maybe that's the right thing. Maybe we've had intelligence failures on so many fronts that it's time to keelhaul this thing and really look at what's going on, or maybe it's a dodge. What do you say?
Well, sure, there's certainly room for improvement, but I fear this is one of those cases where we're doing the right thing for the wrong reason, that this is more about avoiding blame, about damage control, and about presidential politics than it is confronting the truth and taking responsibility.
How can you know that? They haven't even begun yet. Why do you say that?
I'll say that for a couple of reasons, and these remarks are consistent, for example, with Hans Blix, who was the head of UNMOVIC, one of the UN agencies inspecting in Iraq, who said today in the press that he thought that this move was more of a retreat under a mist of controversy than it was an attempt to really ferret out the truth. But, I mean, we don't want to prejudge the commission. I do have major problems, however, with the way this is being framed. This is being framed as an intelligence failure. There's really a problem with the CIA, and I think that misframes it in a way that is fundamentally misleading. Did the CIA or did others make mistakes? I'm sure that that's probably the case. But to think that it's solely and an intelligence problem requires deep amnesia on the part of the American public and leaders.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there are at least five instances that I can think of where the president went beyond the intelligence that he was given. On the uranium in Africa, he was cautioned by the CIA not to go down that route. He pursued it. This claim that Iraq could launch a bio or chem attack within 45 minutes, also going beyond the intelligence.
Wasn't that a British bit?
Well, and endorsed by the U.S. and by the president. The aluminum too. The mobile BW labs that until even last week or 2 weeks ago, Vice President Cheney was still hawking as an idea, despite the fact that there appears to be a consensus within the intelligence community that they are not for bioweapons. And then finally, the incredibly strong statements by the vice president about nuclear weapons, suggesting that Iraq had reconstituted its nuclear weapon, clearly went beyond claims within both the U.S. intelligence community and the international inspectors. So I think we have a case here where the intelligence operates within a context, a policy context, and it's clear from a variety of sources that the president was intent in going on into Iraq. And so I think there's plenty of responsibility to share here, and to put it solely at the feet of the intelligence community is very, very unfair to those hardworking professionals who try to do the best job they can.
Jim Woolsey, you were head of the CIA. You must feel sympathy for the position they're in right now. Condoleezza Rice, September 2002, said, "We don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud." Again, that implication. Is it fair to the CIA to come after it, you know, with a big commission like this and looking to hang blame there? Or should there be some internal reflection within the Bush administration, internal investigation about what was done with the intelligence they had?
Well, first of all, an investigation of intelligence shouldn't just be the CIA. It ought to be our overall intelligence capability. And there could have been some things here that were spoofed and misled, the way we collected information from satellites or from communications intercepts and the like. So we ought to look not just at things the CIA does, such as human intelligence, but also at the full panoply of our collection.
And that's clearly on the table, I think, here.
And I think the other thing is that if this is done dispassionately and fairly by independent, bipartisan, both, whatever, commission, I see no reason not to focus on the intelligence. It is an important political issue, whether or not the administration distorted what was said by the intelligence community. Kay says no. Richard Kerr, who's I think a very nonpartisan and very fine man who used to be deputy director of the agency, has said that the assessments from the intelligence community were essentially, as he's looking at this out at the CIA, he says they were essentially the same in the Clinton administration as they were in the Bush administration, and you do have the fall of 2002 National Intelligence Estimate, which talked about the existence of weapons and stockpiles. So it's important to parse this and get it clear and find out exactly when people were talking about agent, such as anthrax, when they were talking about loaded weapons and the like. The thing I find the most perplexing is that Kay has recently echoed something that appeared in a more general form in the press, that just before the war there was information that weapons were being assigned, he said, quote, to specific units as well as specific locations. Now, that's not extrapolating from past behavior of Saddam, which is something that could have understandably been done by the community. That's apparently just flat false information. It sounds like it might be a deception program of some sort. And this business of the Iraqi generals being
not
wrong,
knowing themselves,
all of that, this is very important to get this straight.
But isn't it part of the job of the intelligence community to know the difference between a deception program? Ari Fleischer, September 2002, there's already a mountain of evidence that Saddam Hussein is gathering weapons for the purpose of using them. And adding additional information is like adding a foot to Mount Everest. But if it's not true,
you want to always do the best you can. But look at what would have been the case if George Tenet had succeeded in recruiting half a dozen Iraqi generals just before the election as American spies. According to what Kay and various parts of the press have been saying about those generals themselves having been misled, we might still have had an intelligence failure, even if we had half a dozen of the best spies in the world. So one can't necessarily conclude here, I think, that this is going to go precisely one way or another.
Right,
we have to stand back and do an objective job of looking at how people were misled, how maybe Iraqis, perhaps even Saddam Hussein, was misled, and who did it and under what circumstances and how it worked so it doesn't happen to us again.
But I can't help wondering if what many perceive as an eagerness in Washington to get this war going wouldn't be part of the formula of investigation here as well, or oughtn't be. We've got a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. James Woolsey, sure. Jim Walsh, let us invite them in. David's calling from Medfield, Massachusetts. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks. Yeah, sure. I've got a quick comment and a quick question.
Yeah.
One of the questions, obviously, is I'm just wondering how quickly intelligence changes. And because I'm asking that because I'm wondering what sort of evidence, you know, could the Bush administration have been given that wasn't in some sense already available to a Clinton administration? And, you know, if it was so overwhelming, why wouldn't the Clinton administration have acted upon it? And I guess the second question is that as far as the commission is concerned, I guess my feeling is that when you're a manager, like the president is, and the Secretary of Defense, your main one of the main functions is to ask the right questions. And if the information couldn't be completely validated, how on earth are they justified in acting on it?
Got so it. That, both great, great questions, David. Thanks very much for your call. Jim Walsh, first to you. Same intelligence likely coming in during the Clinton years and the Bush years? And if so, why such a different response? 9/11 all the difference or something else?
Well, certainly 9/11 is a part of it. But I think, as Secretary O'Neill's book makes clear and others have reported, there was a big difference in the change of administrations. President Bush came to power with advisors who wanted to oust Saddam, and they were looking for an opportunity to oust Saddam. I also think the way in which the intelligence process was handled was different with President Bush than with President Clinton. You'll remember, for example, that Secretary Rumsfeld was so upset with the intelligence he was getting from the traditional organs that he set up his own team within the Defense Department.
Parallel,
sort of the old Team A, Team B. But the idea was that he felt that there was more to get out there, more damning information about Iraq, and by God, he was going to appoint his own folks to find it. There were claims. Now we'll have to see whether they hold up. This is disputed. But there are individual analysts within the community who are saying that they felt pressured to come up with certain outcomes. We had Paul Wolfowitz, who said that they were shopping around for a rationale and that WMD was the main thing that the bureaucracy could agree on, and so they went with that. And I think I want to come back to something that Jim Woolsey said. He referred to the National Intelligence Estimate, the NIE, that was sanitized and partially declassified. So we have some data here. It's not as if we're completely without documents about the decision-making process. Go back and read that NIE.
And what does that indicate to you?
It shows me that there was tremendous disagreement within intelligence, within the various communities. Jim Woolsey is absolutely right. You have CIA, you have INR in State Department, mm-hmm. you have DIA and others. You read those footnotes and you read between the lines, and it's clear that there was tremendous disagreement about some of the claims being made. And the report itself, the NIE, I think is far more nuanced than what we got as consumers listening to speeches in the run-up to the war.
James Woolsey, our caller David, puts a similar issue up in the air with the question, did the administration poke back, push back as aggressively as it should at this information, or was it too eager to welcome it?
Well, it's perfectly reasonable to question intelligence analysts. One has to do that because they sometimes work themselves into biases, or they get a fixed idea about something. They're human beings, and this back and forth between the political leadership and analysts is perfectly fine. The State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research has been around for many years, and that's sort of what it does. It does for the Secretary of State, I think what Rumsfeld was probably setting up a small office to do the same thing for him, to come up with questions and ideas to go back and forth with the analysts. I don't see anything particularly extraordinary about that. And I think in response to David's question about how quickly can something change, it can change relatively quickly. It depends on agent reports. It depends on photography. It depends on communications intercepts. I'm continue to be struck by the specificity of what David Kaye is telling us, this specific weapons and with specific units at specific locations. That's much more than was in the National Intelligence Estimate.
Specific weapons in locations that were never found.
Right. And so, to me, when I hear something that precise from a very able man, I know David, and he's first rate, and he's a remarkably able public servant. And when he talks about that, that suggests to me, particularly with some of the implications of what he said, that there may well have been a rather determined and detailed Iraqi deception program.
But that seems a funny angle to take, Jim Woolsey. I mean, his big message is, we got it all wrong.
Well, yes, but why? I mean, the whole point is why. David did say, by the way, that there may have been small stockpiles that were not found or might not be found. And remember the example I used about 12 versus 4 suitcases.
Sure.
We need to stand back from this and do a careful look.
But not far back that we lose the main message that David Kaye gave, which was they weren't there. We got this wrong.
Well, they weren't. Large stockpiles weren't there, but he had a question about small stockpiles. Yeah. And again, you have to use numbers rather than adjectives. Mm-hmm. 12 suitcases versus four, a tractor trailer and a half versus less than half a tractor trailer. These things matter. And that also affects the question of whether or not some of this at the last moment may have been moved out to Syria, which is another matter which David raises and says was a possibility.
Jim Woolsey, let me put those two things to you. Jim Woolsey's still concerned about the possibility that they were there despite the general tenor of David Kaye's remarks. You're concerned about loose nukes and loose weapons. So what's your worry level about something having leaked out of Iraq tonight?
Well, I think Jim Woolsey's appropriately raises the question about some of this specific intelligence. We'll want to find out why there were these claims. I remember them just before the war that there were weapons being shipped to particular units. But, I mean, let me understand this. We're saying that we were trying to gather intelligence and our adversary, a evil guy, lied to us and concealed things. Well, you know, duh. I think that's sort of that goes with the territory. That's what we expect to be the case. And I hear the music coming, so I'll cut my comment there. But there's more to be said.
We'll come back to it. James Woolsey, Jim Walsh, please stand by. We're talking tonight about an investigation of the missing rationale for war in Iraq. The WMD are missing in action. The president says he wants to know why. Do you want an answer before you cast your next vote for president? Do you expect to get one? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the president's call for a new bipartisan commission to investigate intelligence failures in Iraq and beyond. You can join our conversation tonight. Is the CIA being set up to take a fall here? Or does U.S. intelligence need a complete physical and overhaul? If the Bush administration had not claimed a WMD threat, could the nation have been persuaded to go to war? And should George Bush pay a price for the missing WMD, even lose the White House? Or is this opportunistic carping by his political opponents? Do you trust this commission to deliver something like the truth? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by James Woolsey, former director of the CIA. With me in the studio, Jim Walsh, executive director of the Managing the Atom Project at Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. And right now from Arlington, Virginia, by Ray McGovern. He was a CIA analyst for 27 years. He served seven presidents from John F. Kennedy to George Bush Sr. He's co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Good evening and welcome, Ray McGovern.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Right. So we understand where you're coming from. What is Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity?
Well, we just celebrated our first anniversary, Tom. We set ourselves up when we saw that intelligence would be playing a major role in decisions prior to the war, and we had grave concerns with respect to the politicization of intelligence. We saw indications in late 2002 that the intelligence was being cooked to the recipe of high policy.
So now the president says, maybe we did have a problem here in Iraq, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. We're going to investigate the U.S. intelligence operations up and down until we figure it out. What do you make of that, Ray McGovern?
Well, Tom, I think I'd like to say a word about timing here. If I'm correct on the latest reports from the president, the terms of reference of this inquiry would last past the election. Is that correct?
Some months past. 18 months, we're told, which would put it well into next year.
Yeah, and I think the broadening of the terms of reference indicate what this is all about. The British would call this a charade. I would call it a charade. If you want to look into the subject of the missing weapons of mass destruction, you can do that, and you could do that with alacrity, and you could do that within the nine-month period that, for example, NASA did with some of the misadventures there.
But then, Ray, exactly what are you saying, that the intelligence community got it right and it got twisted by the Bush administration, or they got it wrong, and the Bush administration can't be blamed for being wrong also?
Tom, it's a both end, and I think that we need to sort of separate opinion from fact here. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a few facts.
Mm-hmm.
When the administration decided to wage war against Iraq, this decision came at the very latest, the spring of 2002. There was no national intelligence estimate.
But there was intelligence. I mean, it's not
there
as though
was,
we weren't paying attention to Iraq.
But in every key decision like that, in my 27 years of experience, before a decision would be made, a national intelligence estimate was drafted. And it was not drafted in this case because George Tenet, the head of the CIA, was deathly afraid that his experts, his honest experts, would come up with the wrong answer. And so what we have was a situation...
The wrong answer meaning not the answer the White House desired.
Correct. If you look back to February through July of 2001, you had Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice both saying that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction, and he posed no threat not only to us, but even to his immediate neighbors.
Until when were they saying that?
February and July of 2001.
Hmm.
Now, the shibboleth is that on 9/11, everything changed. Now, does that mean that all of a sudden, when he didn't have weapons of mass destruction, after 9/11 he did? Well, I'll leave that to your own imagination. What I would like to point out is, Jim Woolsey referred, or someone referred to the August 26th speech of Dick Cheney.
I think that was me, but yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, he made that speech in his own little preemptive coup there, because everybody else was off on vacation, and he laid down the marker, and he said, among other things, that Saddam Hussein was developing nuclear weapons and that U.N. inspections were a charade. They would never work. They're deceptive, okay?
Hmm.
There still was no national intelligence estimate until sleepy Bob Graham on the Senate Intelligence Committee woke up, and Dick Durbin said, Bob, do we have a national intelligence estimate on this? And Bob said, gosh, I did. Yes, we don't. And so within a period of 3 weeks... An estimate was, how shall I say, it was manufactured, okay, led by the same person, Robert Walpole, who distorted the estimate that Jim Woolsey referred to before, the estimate in 98, which said that North Korea would get an intercontinental capability to hit us last year.
Ray McGovern, let me ask you, I see you've got a big picture, but I want to ask, there were many countries that were told, and we've been told repeatedly, shared this estimate that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction, that the UN was concerned, that's why they had people in there trying to find them all these years.
The question was how many? The question was whether these weapons posed any sort of threat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I said, in 2001, both Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell said they posed no threat. These foreign intelligence services, sure, they thought they had a few weapons of mass destruction, so-called, residual ones, but certainly not in the quantity or of the quality that posed any threat. And that's why the Germans, that's why the French would not go along with what we wanted to do.
Ray McGovern, stand by. I want to put this to James Woolsey. Mr. Woolsey, here's Ray McGovern. He was in the CIA, which you led for a while, for 27 years. He looks out from his vantage point and says this was manufactured intelligence. This intelligence was cooked up to order for the White House. How do you respond to that? And B, how does it come to be that the guy like Ray McGovern might have such a view so opposite to your own?
Well, I think that the key issue here is whether post 9/11 some type of programs in areas like chemical, bacteriological, particularly bacteriological or nuclear, are more of a threat than they were before 9/11. And I think Mr. McGovern's underlying premise here with respect to the Rice and other statements before 9/11 and with respect to whether or not the weapons were numerous enough to pose a threat, quantity he referred to and so on, I take it his underlying premise is that all we are really worried about is battlefield use of those weapons or long-range launches of missiles, whereas the whole premise of the September 02 White House statement on strategy that I referred to earlier, which talked about the possibility of using preventive war against a country that was a terrible dictatorship, had ties with terrorist groups, and had weapons of mass destruction programs. The whole premise there is that weapons of mass destruction might be given to terrorists. I think it has relatively little to do with quantity or with battlefield use.
Ray McGovern, are you just missing a beat here? Are you not up to speed, Ray McGovern?
No, I'm sorry that Jim Woolsey left the agency so soon, because he would know otherwise that in September of 2002, the considered judgment of the Central Intelligence Agency was, number one, that Saddam Hussein had never shared any kind of weaponry like this with terrorists, and number two, that he would be, quote, extremely unlikely, end quote, to do so unless his back was right up against the wall. So the intelligence judgment there was that even if he did have these little pieces of WMD, he wouldn't use them except in extremists.
If I might just say one thing, that may have been the considered judgment of the agency in 02, but there are people at the agency that have systematically not thought that Al-Qaeda and Iraq would work together on anything at all. I believe that judgment is wrong. I think these are like two mafia families. They hate each other. They insult each other. They kill each other from time to time. But I think they are perfectly capable, the Ba'athists and Al-Qaeda, for example, in cooperating here and there on individual matters. And that was manifested in George Tenet's letter in the fall of 02 to the Congress, where he talked about Iraqi training of Al-Qaeda in, quote, poisons, gases, and explosives. So one doesn't, one can't discount small quantities. That takes only a relatively small quantity of anthrax, as was shown in the fall of 01, to create great devastation and economic loss and so forth.
And yet even that small quantity has not been found. But how fascinating to hear two intelligence perspectives. I mean, very quickly, Jim Walsh, see what a stew you can get into when you begin interpreting, maybe from different starting points, intelligence information. But here's my question for you. We have gone to war with Iraq. We've essentially taken over the country. The cost, the price in lives and money is already enormous. We're talking many, many billions and many billions to go. And it was based on this intelligence. I mean, that's what we were told. That was the case that was made. Preemptive war was necessary because of what we knew. Now it turns out we may not have known. Is it just too difficult to support a strategy of preemptive war if you've got to have a kind of perfect intelligence foreknowledge to justify the war?
I think that's exactly right, Tom. I think there are two problems with the discussion so far, not our discussion, but the general problem of blaming it on the intelligence community. One, there is blame to go around, and I think a lot of it goes back to policy leaders. It's not just the poor analysts who are at fault here. And number two, our discussion of it as an intelligence failure, I think, is unrealistic and dangerously misleading. We talk about it as if the intelligence community doesn't know everything, if they're not omniscient, if they're not all-knowing, then it's an intelligence failure. And that, unfortunately, is what what is required for a preemptive strike strategy.
Rather, you mean we have to know exactly what's going on because we're invading a country where we're going to kill people and be killed.
And let's be clear, there are alternatives here. A deterrent strategy is less demanding on intelligence. A containment strategy is less demanding on intelligence. An inspection strategy, which no one talks about this, but David Kaye has been cited several times tonight. No one has mentioned that David Kaye said quite explicitly that UN inspections worked, that Saddam destroyed those weapons because he feared that he would be caught.
But Jim Woolsey's indicating that we had to ratchet up the tension here, had to make the noose tighter because there was a new threat in evidence that even a small amount could be delivered inside the United States. Well, so it's a different story.
Yeah, and I have to respectfully disagree. And the notion that somehow this all changed on 2001 ignores the fact that al-Qaeda was in existence for long before that. I mean, let's remember the 1993 World Trade Center attack, for example. And moreover, the evidence that we've had since then continues to corroborate the notion that there was no collaboration going on. Saddam documents indicating don't collaborate with the foreign fighters. Other statements by al-Qaeda in Guantanamo captives saying, no, they weren't collaborating. But I think the real problem here is the preemptive strike doctrine. Jim Woolsey offers what I think is an innovative threshold for deciding when to go to war. Anyone who's a dictator, who has a program, who has some relation to terrorists, well, we'd be fighting a war every year throughout the nuclear age if we attacked everyone who met those criteria.
Well,
and first on the list would be Pakistan, our good friend, who which is a dictatorship, a person took power through a military coup, has weapons of mass destruction, and was intimately involved with Indian terrorists. So
let's get Jim Woolsey's response. James Woolsey.
Yeah, well, foreign policy and national security policy is not a matter of litmus tests. It's a matter of judgment. And I think that the administration's judgment that where you had a dictatorship that shows such incredible disregard for humanity as to kill 2 million people the way Saddam did, to have some types of connections of the sort that Tenet pointed out in the fall of 2002 to terrorist groups, including al-Qaeda, including the training that was supplied by the Ba'athists in, quoting George Tenet, explosives, gases, and poisons. Where you have that together with weapons of mass destruction programs, as a matter of judgment, not a matter of litmus paper test, I think it's not unreasonable to think about preventive war. I think under this world that we live in post 9/11, admittedly, I think Jim Walsh has a point. The world didn't really change so much on 9/11, but our perception of it certainly did, and it's understandable how the administration might have had a different attitude toward terrorists. States with some kind of terrorist ties and some type of weapons of mass destruction programs that were as horrible a dictatorship as Saddam was.
But I can't help thinking
that's that's what changed 9/11. I think the administration made a bad political mistake in not going to those issues as a description of its reason and admitting it was a matter of judgment, not a matter of
It would have been great if that's indeed what it was. It would have been great if they'd been fully forthright. Ray McGovern, we just have a minute left. I want to get one more statement from you.
I think we're missing the whole point here.
Please, yeah.
If you look at the Project for a New American Century documents, you will see the strategic, you will see the ideological justification for this war. It had nothing to do with Jim Woolsey's tripod. WMD, human rights, contacts with terrorists. It had everything to do with throwing our weight around as the sole remaining superpower in the world in a critical area where we needed the oil and where we could do a terrific favor for our close ally, Israel. And this is the key point here.
Do you expect that to be the conclusion of the bipartisan commission President Bush will name, Ray McGovern?
Cui bono is the question here. Who did this war profit? It profited the state of Israel by removing the only threat they faced there, and it removed.
That's utter nonsense.
Saddam
the Israelis,
Hussein
the Israelis
so that we could
were
control the oil and get the military installations in this country. And if we don't want
Ray McGovern, we got it. And Jim Woolsey is going to call it nonsense, and Jim Walsh is going to look on in some dismay at all. it's been great to have all of you tonight, and I'm sorry we can't go on, but we cannot. Our time has come to an end. Jim Woolsey, former director of the CIA, thank you very much for being with us tonight. Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
And Jim Walsh, executive director of managing the ATOM Project at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Callers, sorry we couldn't get to more of you tonight. Just too hot in the kitchen, but we'll be back. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.